Yeah, so it's recording and you can introduce yourself.
Okay. So basically, I'm Raghid Jraidini. I'm a member of the political bureau of the Lebanese Communist Party, working on the media platforms and basically responsible of media for the Communist Party of Lebanon.
Thanks so much. And just to begin, I'm curious if you can tell like a little bit of the history of the Communist Party, how it got started, and then a little bit more about the structure, the ideology, just to like give more of a context to the party itself.
Sure. So basically, the party was established in 1924 by a group of people from different places in Lebanon who were basically workers or union leaders, basically, in some places. Alongside basically political activists who came to Lebanon following the Armenian genocide, so some Armenian communists basically who were refugees back then in Lebanon and then became part of our society basically. So in 1924, basically, they decided to establish a party called the Party of the People, back then, if that's a correct translation. But a few years later, in the first party congress, basically, they decided to adopt the name the Lebanese Communist Party, definitely influenced by the uprising of basically communist movements all around the world following the October Revolution and what came with it. In terms of political activism around the world, the party has been ongoing ever since. There were some periods of time where the party was officially banned in Lebanon. Part of it was when the French basically mandate was happening in Lebanon. At certain periods of it, they've banned the party, and then. The party was actually back to its public way of being, if that's the correct way of stating it in English, in the 1960s. And after that, we've been participating in most of the political life in the country. The party has never been in any kind of government in Lebanon, even though we've run in a few elections, but never succeeded to win any seats. And that's due basically to the sectarian system that we have in Lebanon. So basically most representatives of political groups are represented based on their sects and religions, and that we do have an ideological problem with first, and practically it makes it kind of impossible for non-sectarian people to be able to effectively run and represent the political groups or the political the people who within this who are communists and leftists and non-sectarian in the country cannot really be represented within the system. For example, our party is spread all around Lebanon from its borders with occupied Palestine to the borders with Syria and the north. And is represented in nearly every village or major city in the country. But the way that the elections work in Lebanon is that you will have to be running for a specific seat, for a specific sect within a specific area. So basically, it's usually the majority of this sect who gets to elect the representative for the seat. So that makes it kind of very difficult for non-sectarian people to be able to enter the parliament, basically, in Lebanon. So we haven't participated in any government since the establishment of the party. And we are actually running for elections next month, basically in May. We do have the general elections in Lebanon, and we are running with a few candidates who are party members and a bigger list of candidates who are actually not members but friends of the party, or the party wants to support their candidacy in some form during these elections. And basically we are trying to enter the parliament, but that's not the main objective of campaigning for elections. It's mostly to be able to basically spread some of the ideas we believe are the way out of the crisis we are in Lebanon now, which is basically a very deep crisis. that we are passing through right now, and we didn't hit the bottom yet, but we are certainly heading this way. That's it, basically, to answer your question. I don't know if I took too long, but...
No, that was perfect. And that, I think, you segued immediately into what I'm curious in. I know a lot of people are very curious about, which is the crisis and what's going on. And I wonder if you can first kind of begin by, it's hard to maybe explain the whole thing in just a short answer, but for anyone who is unfamiliar about, you know, what's been happening in Lebanon, kind of a brief explanation of the crisis, the historical roots of it as well, and the legacy of the civil war in Lebanon. And then we can kind of talk more about recent events, especially in the past couple of weeks, in the last month, with bankruptcy and everything, and how the party is responding to it.
Sure. So basically, the Lebanese system is built around a fake idea, which is that we are the Switzerland of the Middle East. Beirut is Paris of the East. And I don't know, like these random statements who actually come from the fact that we do have banking secrecy in the country, which is basically used as a tax haven and a way of attracting foreign investments. So the economical background of the country is just that. And during the years, way before the civil war, even after the Ottoman Empire fell, basically there was a period of famine in Lebanon that destroyed most of our agricultural system. And following that, when the French mandate happened over Lebanon, they also didn't really invest in what is industries and farming and agriculture and all that. They went straight to basically big city corporations and this way of capitalistic government that is not linked to production itself. It's mostly linked to the idea of a banking sector, insurance sector, the service sector in general, which really thrived actually in the country and was the backbone of its economy. But that proved to be a very fatal decision, since it led us basically to being a country that imports most of it what it consumes, basically. So our import versus export ratio, if that's the word, is 80% to 20%. So we export just a tiny bit of goods, and we import a huge amount of what we consume as a society. And there is also the basically, we do consume a lot as a society, and that's also some kind of an issue, but let's not blame the people for that. Basically, so that system led us to bankruptcy. The banks entered a Ponzi scheme, basically, that we cannot actually find another term for it, in a way that they've attracted, they've asked people, or basically they told people that if you put your money in the banks, you'll get a very high interest rate, which was 5 or 6 times higher than the general rates that you usually see around the world. And the people did trust that banking sector, since it was the backbone of the economy since the 60s, and they did put their money in it. In a way, basically, in a deal, or not in a secret deal, kind of, between the banks, the central bank, and the Lebanese governments that came throughout these years, they've managed to take loans. The government was taking loans from the banks through the central bank, which basically ended up being the people's money, and covering these export versus import ratios, bled all the money from the banks. And at a certain point in October 2019, and a few months before it started to show that it's going to happen, the central and also another complication of this issue is that in Lebanon we had basically pegged our lira currency, our national currency, which is the Lebanese lira, to the US dollars since the 90s, basically. And that pegging also cost the central bank quite a lot of money. And by doing that, there was a loss, basically, by covering the difference in between the real market rate and the official rate that the lira is pegged to the dollar to. There was a deficit doing that. So basically, we've also lost a ton of resources as a country for that specific financial decision. And people are allowed to put in banks, both in Lebanese liras or in dollars. So you can have an account in US dollars and an account in Lebanese lira. And most people used, not most people, but a lot of people did use the US dollar as a safer option than the Lebanese lira, since the lira was tormented by the war and its value decreased during the civil war period in between 75 and 90. So the trust in US dollar was a bit more established amongst the people who want to invest in banks. And so a lot of people did invest in US dollars and put their US dollars in the banks. And suddenly the banks decided to stop giving people their dollars back. They said, we don't have it anymore. You're not going to get your dollars. But this didn't happen in a way that is organized by the government or actually influenced by the government. It was left to the banks to decide the fate of the people who had their money in it. And after that, there were also some limitations on Lebanese lira withdrawals. And that's basically where we are now. You have a set, a fixed amount of dollars that you can withdraw from the bank every month as someone who has money in a bank, in both in dollars or in Lebanese. In dollars, it's practically nothing. Like you can get like what will be basically, I don't know, $20 or $50 max, depending on the number of dollars you have in your account. So basically the amount of money you have in your account. And that also led the central bank to basically create unofficial rates that we do have quite a few now. Like there's a rate that is the black market rate, which is when you go to the street and try to exchange dollars for Lebanese liras or vice versa. You'll get today it's approximately 25,000 liras for one US dollar. Before the crisis, it was 1,500 liras for one US dollar. So that's like more than approximately 20 times the rate it was. And the central bank has a lollar rate, which is a ridiculous term, but it's specific to Lebanon now, which is the Lebanese dollars, basically, which is as if it's a currency, but it's not. It's just a rate that the central bank has fixed that is saying that I'll give you your dollars back based on an 8,000 liras per dollar rate, which is three times lower than the black market rate. And there's also something that the central bank created, which is something called in Arabic minassa or platform, but it's not like actually the direct translation would be platform, but it's basically another rate that it set for certain importers of good like fuel, oil, wheat, like basically a list of necessary items for the economy that the central bank said that I will basically subsidize these, but instead of using the previous rate of 1,500 liras for dollar, the pegged, basically the official rate, we'll use this rate that changes weekly depending on the black market rate in a way that it's slightly lower than it. So that's how basically the crisis has been being dealt with. I know it's a bit chaotic and I won't be able to explain it in a few minutes, but there are plenty of resources online if you'd like to mention them. I can send you links about detailed explanations of it. But basically that's what's been going in terms of financial and economical situation. Socially, there's a crisis happening because people still, their salaries are still unchanged. So I'll give you an example. My mother, for example, which she is a teacher in a public school, her salary before the crisis was equivalent to, let's say, $1,800 or something, her monthly salary. Now it's worth approximately $200. And the prices of everything have risen in a way that doesn't reflect the purchasing power of the people, basically. They're just following the dollar since we import everything. So everything is bought in foreign currencies, either in dollar or in euro or any other currency that we export using that. we import, sorry. So basically we're importing everything and paying for it in fresh dollars, what we call fresh dollars in Lebanon now is basically dollars that are actually dollars, not Lebanese dollars or in banks. So we're paying in fresh dollars for stuff, and we are getting paid in Lebanese lira in the same salaries that were before the crisis. So that's the case for most people in Lebanon, except for just a tiny proportion of the society that works with international organizations or who work from Lebanon for companies outside or stuff like that, who are actually getting paid in dollars. And these people have seen like a huge rise in their purchasing power now. But that's just a tiny proportion of the society. We can't generalize that. So most people are living basically in very bad circumstances. They can't afford schooling anymore. And also a lot of private universities are now dollarizing. And that's also a term we are using, their tuition fees. So basically, instead of paying in Lebanese lira, they want you to pay in fresh dollars, which is kind of catastrophic because none of the students nor their parents can afford that. That alongside in the educational sector also, the government didn't invest in public schools nor in the public university in Lebanon that has had a very good academic record and very good teachers and students who excel wherever they go. But the country decided to, the government of the country basically decided to not to invest in these two institutions that are very important to the country. So basically students are left to be in private schools and universities that are mostly run by the political elite, the corrupt political elite of the country, or by religious institutions who are not very far from being also corrupt political elite in Lebanon. So most of these private institutions are run by people who do not place the interest of the people or the society first, basically. So most students are left to their fate. We've seen a decrease in the number of students yearly since 2019. That actually shows that most of the youth of the country now is either leaving the country if it has the means to, or basically just dropping school and working in whatever they can so they can provide for their families. And that's a situation that's gonna have a long-term impact on the country and also on its economy, since these people should be basically the backbone of the economy if we wanna build actually something new, because our economical system did collapse. So we need to basically be working towards building a new economy, and that should rely on the fresh graduates, basically, especially from the Lebanese university, that is now struggling to even do exams. So they don't have even money to print papers to do exams. That's how bad the situation is. The most classrooms are not lit, are not there's no air conditioning in them, there's no heating, there's no fuel to run the generators, and especially that we don't have 24/7 electricity in Lebanon. We barely have 2 or 3 hours of electrical coverage now. So most people do rely on private generators, which is a mafia on its own, that also is leaving a very big burden on the economical situation of families in Lebanon. Since it's also following the increase in fuel prices, and there are some official regulations for it, but they're not really enforced, and most private generator owners do what they please, basically. So they do not follow the regulations, and no one is actually actively enforcing them. So that's a bit of a brief about the economic situation of the country. But as I said, I didn't cover all of its aspects, since it's a huge topic that needs hours and hours of explanation, basically.
Yeah, and with that, and I think you did a great job of kind of giving a brief overview of it. I think a lot of Americans and a lot of people in the West, for the first time, were hearing about the crisis after the port explosion in 2020 in Beirut. That was the first time that it was on their TV, so first time they're paying attention. And that is, I think, one example of the impacts of this crisis. As you're saying, they're very theoretical and they are kind of in the abstract economic terms, but they have very significant impacts, whether it's this explosion or medicine being unaffordable, food being unaffordable. So I wonder if you can talk a little bit more about you were mentioning sort of the social impacts that it's led to. It's also led to widespread protesting and the collapse of multiple governments. So kind of more of the political and social ramifications of this. And then I'm curious about, you know, this crisis to me, as you're describing it, and I think to many people, it's clearly a fault of the collapse of capitalism and the continuation of imperialism in Lebanon. So it's a crisis purely of capitalist origin. But I wonder also how you perceive now in very recently the declaration of bankruptcy, as well as the fact that when these crises occur in the world, the typical solution, of course, is, and we're already seeing it, the IMF swooping in and proposing sort of a restructuring of the country to further destabilize and destroy the country. All these kind of social ramifications and how the IMF kind of coming in will quite obviously make it much, much worse.
Yeah. Okay. So basically, you've mentioned the Beirut port explosion. Let me just mention that first, because I actually missed it when I was doing the chronological, basically, listing basically the events chronologically. The explosion was a devastating thing that happened in the midst of the collapse. Basically, we were in the middle of an economical collapse, and already the hospitals basically were running out of some medicine, some medical equipment. Basically, with the COVID pandemic also, we've had a problem as a country dealing with the oxygen tanks. We didn't have enough of them. We didn't have money to import basic needs to deal with the COVID pandemic, basically. And in the middle of all that, a huge explosion happened in the port of Beirut that is basically due to our corrupt system, if we can still call it just corrupt, because it became criminal in a very broad sense, since it managed to destroy basically half of the capital by storing a huge amount of explosives in a place where they shouldn't be, and in a way that it should have been dealt with years ago. They've been there for years, basically. I'm not gonna go into the technicalities of it, since it's already been out there in the media and everything. You definitely know some stuff about that. But what happened with this after this explosion is that it also destroyed a lot of the hospitals in the capital city. So and with the huge amount of people injured and the huge amount of people who died after in this explosion, basically, they were really overwhelmed in a way that it actually made it worse for the medical sector in the country. And it also psychologically really affected the people of Lebanon, basically. This insane amount of corruption and this criminal behavior of our government that led to the destruction of the port of Beirut, basically, and of most of its city center, and basically all the souks and all the marketplaces, basically, in the capital were destroyed. And most of the people in Lebanon, being a centralized kind of country, work in the capital, and either their houses or their offices, their business places, their stores, whatever, they were all basically damaged or destroyed. That really pushed a lot of people to leave the country, as simple as that. Like, it was the end point for them. Like, we've been in the streets since October 2019, and definitely there were an unprecedented uprising in Lebanon following basically what the banks started to declare in October 2019, when they said that we won't be able to take our dollars from the banks anymore. And also following some statements by the government back then that was dealing with that issue by raising taxes on WhatsApp and on stuff that basically will affect the mass majority of the population instead of dealing with the actual issue, which was that there's a bunch of political elite, basically political and economical elite in the country who are stealing all our resources. Basically, that's the stealing. And when we say stealing in Lebanon or we talk about corruption, it's not just like these random little things like you'd pay a bribe for someone to do you a document. It's basically a whole Ponzi scheme concerning all the citizens of the country and all their bank deposits. So it's basically a major action. It's not just the corrupt system is legalizing its corruption, was legalizing its corruption all throughout the 90s in some forms by basically stealing the people's resources. What was the remaining of the question? Because I actually forgot it.
Yeah, I'm curious about, you know, thinking about the crisis, as you're saying, and the criminal nature of it, in addition to all the ramifications it's had socially, like this explosion and leading to protests, leading to people leaving the country, and now more recently the declaration of bankruptcy. What I'm interested in is how you already see like the IMF and the World Bank and kind of the institutions of American imperialism moving in.
So basically, first, let me just comment on the bankruptcy declarement, which is actually not something that can be official, because, you know, a government doesn't just declare bankruptcy in a non-official statement, basically. So what happened is that the vice or the portparole, basically, of the Lebanese government said it in a way that the Lebanese government is bankrupt, but that's something that every Lebanese person knows since 2019. It's not a breaking news, if you know what I mean. It's we do know that the system is bankrupt. It's lacking. We're lacking goods. We can't import what we used to import. We can't withdraw our money from the banks. The salaries are not basically improving, even though the value of everything the value of everything we own is decreasing and the salaries are not increasing. So basically, that's the definition of a bankrupt system. So the Lebanese government is bankrupt, and that's something that doesn't need to be declared officially for it to be true. It is true. And as for the involvement of the IMF and the World Bank, basically, in Lebanon, and all of the basically imperialist means of interfering with economies, if that's also the correct term. So basically, we've been victims of IMF policies since the 90s in Lebanon, and our governments basically always decided to rely on foreign aids or foreign loans to be able to cover the deficit in the financial system. Also by creating some kind of private loans for the country, like Paris 1, Paris 2, Paris 3, and CEDAR, and I don't know, other names that they gave to the same thing, which is like, please give us some money so we can maintain our economy, and all this money is going to waste, basically, because we are not fixing any of the problems. We're just covering a deficit. That's what's been happening with these. And now, definitely, the political ruling class basically also is asking the IMF for help. The IMF last week or 10 days ago basically issued a statement saying that they've reached some kind of a deal with the Lebanese government. And they're gonna basically start this plan by giving the country $3 billion, which would actually solve nothing at all, because we've been spending, the Central Bank of Lebanon has been spending a lot more than that monthly to cover just the difference in between the rates, basically the exchange rates of the Lebanese dollars to the lira. So the tiny amount that they're proposing won't solve anything. It's just basically a way of saying that we are interested in negotiating with the Lebanese government now, as it promised them somehow that it's gonna do major changes and fight corruption and all these basically nonsense statements that they can say whenever they need money, and they actually won't do anything about that. And to basically the IMF and the World Bank do know that since the very start, since 1998, where basically the Lebanese government decided to borrow money in foreign currencies, so basically from outside the Lebanese banking sector, everyone knew, everyone, I mean, like the central bank and the World Bank, the IMF, the foreign banks who had branches or affiliations with Lebanese banks, they all knew that the system is going towards, is only going towards bankruptcy. And we can see that clearly by most of foreign banks withdrawing their investments in Lebanese banks in the late 90s. That was a clear sign that they knew that the banking system is gonna collapse and the economy is gonna collapse. So so the IMF didn't do shit about it. Sorry, didn't do anything about it. That could be edited. They just continued giving money to a system that they know is gonna collapse, and their only agenda was to preserve the political class that is ruling the country. They needed to be in that position so they can deal with all sorts of economical interference and using this Lebanese banking system that that basically promotes a neoliberal agenda and promotes secrecy, banking secrecy, and all these things that are of a huge interest for international capitals, basically, to put their money in this country. But by doing that, we were only prolonging the period before collapse, basically. But eventually, we were gonna collapse since we don't have a real economy. And the IMF is clearly not interested in building a clear economy. That's not what they ask for when they ask a country about its plan to go out of the crisis, basically, to solve the crisis. There is a clear difference between what we see as a party, or basically also as a lot of opposition groups in Lebanon, basically. There's a clear difference between what we think is the way out of the crisis and what the IMF thinks is the way out of the crisis, which will only reestablish the rule of this political elite, basically.
Absolutely. And I actually have been reading a little bit of the program proposed by the Political Bureau in, you know, countering the IMF or like Western-backed program. So I'm curious if you can tell me more about the Communist Party's like theorization of a solution to this crisis and economic and social transformation, and the transitional phase, as you called it, to escape the crisis, changing the foundations of the secular state, corruption, monetary and financial issues, like all of these different proposals that the LCP has offered.
All right, so there are two aspects to or basically two lines for the answer of this question. Basically, there's a political, I mean, institutional aspect to it, and there's also an economical and financial aspect to it. So the Lebanese system, being sectarian and being basically just about preserving the rule of some sectarian sects and groups of people in the country, will not be able to build a system that can defy corruption or fight against it. So that fighting sectarianism in the country is one of the most important things in order to be able to build a system that actually works, that where you can actually implement anti-corruption laws and deal with the unnecessary the unnecessary staff that is working just to fill some positions. Because, for example, when you wanna work for a public institution like a school or something, for example, you'll need to, or not schools, but maybe ministries and stuff like that. in any public company in Lebanon, basically, they need to take employees from all the sects in an equal way. So basically, it's even that is not dealt with based on your skills. It's only based on basically what religious group you belong to, and if they need to have employees from that sect to cover a gap or something like that. That's basically how we deal with this kind of situations. And that also is the same for all aspects of the governance of the country. So basically, getting rid of the sectarian system is a very important thing in establishing a country that actually works, or a system that actually can perform and work. Other than that, there's also a lot of reforms that needs to happen, or basically some major changes in the way the country is governed, in terms of the electoral system, in terms of dealing with the civic affairs, if that's also the correct term in English. So basically, the way we function as a society is that we do not have civil marriage, we do not have civil judiciary system to solve familial problems, and all that are also related to religious institutions. So basically, when you want to marry, if you're basically a Muslim or a Shia Muslim, you'll go to the Shia Muslim institution and get married there, and your papers will be signed according to the Sharia law. If you're a Christian, a Maronite, you'll go to the Maronite Christian church, and etc., etc., etc. So basically, and all of the divorce, your kids will be registered based on that sect, and all of these social issues also have to be dealt with in order for us to transform the country from basically some form of tribal governance, if that's an adequate term, to a modern state, basically, that actually functions based on your nationality, and that's it. You don't have to include also a religious affiliation next to it for me to know where you are registered, for example. That's from the social perspective. We also need to really work on that as a country. But in the economical aspect of this answer, there's also basically huge reforms that needs to be done on the taxation system in the country. We do not have a lot of industries are don't have basically high taxes on profit. And some of them don't even have taxes on profit. So, for example, if you sell a house in Lebanon, no one takes a penny out of your profit. And that has been a way that the Lebanese real estate sector has been sucking the life out of the people, basically using that and making huge amount of profit that will not fund the government in any forms. We also need to increase taxes on higher salaries and establish, I don't know the term in English, but basically it's a system based on steps, if that's the correct translation.
Sort of like a progressive taxation system.
Exactly. Yeah. That's it. We also need to implement a progressive taxation system. So the taxes reflect your salary, and they're not just like fixed by sector or by place of work. And there are also an aspect for that is to try and deal with all the money that's been stolen from the country, either by the banks, by making a huge amount of profits by from the interest rates that they used to lend money to the government to, or by also pursuing the criminal record of all the corrupt people who have been in the government, basically, and that had stolen a huge amount of money also. So there are this aspect as well. And we also need to be working on building an economy, like moving towards an economy that has some industries, that has some services that it can export by, so we don't rely only on foreign aids and the IMF and the World Bank lending us money to run. The country needs to find a way for its economical expansion, basically, in terms of exporting and in terms of producing goods to be consumed inside the market and in the Lebanese market instead of importing everything we do consume. So by implementing some of these laws in the agricultural sector and in the industrial sector, and I'll give examples. For example, in the agricultural sector, we do have the Bekaa Valley is a huge part, the huge area of the country, basically, is a very fertile valley that's been used for agriculture since the Romans rule, basically. This fertile land is being kind of wasted by not planning anything in the agricultural sector. So everyone plants whatever they want. There's no incentive for certain plantations that would benefit the economy or the society. For example, we do plant a lot of tomatoes, for example, and in the same year where we've had a big crop of tomatoes, and the prices will definitely go down when you have an abundance in production. The prices will go down and no one will buy the tomatoes. They'll rot. The farmers will throw them in the streets in protest. And the same year we'll be importing ketchup, for example, for a huge amount of money. And that's just ridiculous in terms of planning. Like, you could have used these tomatoes. And that's a very small example, but it also applies to everything else in the agricultural sector. So that's also part of how we should be dealing with the issue. I think that's it. That's what comes to my mind right now.
Yeah, the next thing I'm interested in talking about is in your proposal for the solution, you talk about, in addition, changing the foreign policy of Lebanon as well as kind of a central tenet of this. And specifically, you know, this crisis is obviously because of the United States in many ways and because of the dollar. But I wonder if you can talk about first a little bit of the United States imperialism and how that has to be resisted, and also of Israeli imperialism and Zionism as well. And we can perhaps relate this to the Communist Party's support for Palestine, for the rights of Palestinians. Talk more about that.
Well, so basically Lebanon has been under the radar, basically, of American imperialism for a long time now, and under the influence of it as in terms of foreign policies as well. We've been puppets for the US government we as a country, the Lebanon has been a puppet for the US government for a long time now, and these policies have not led to anything good in the country. If one just looks at the state of the country now, you can clearly see that that wasn't a good deal. Basically, it wasn't a good deal for the country at all. As the defenders of that line of political activity would say, basically, that it's the best deal we can get. Well, it's not. It clearly isn't. So that actually proved to be a bad thing these past few years, a catastrophic thing, basically, in how we ran the country. Also, basically, the US government and its continuous support to the government of an oppressor government that is in Palestine running the country, and that had waged war against Lebanon quite a number of times, and the Lebanese Communist Party was a big part of the national resistance movement since the 40s, and then more in the 60s, and then even more in 82 when Israel invaded Lebanon in 82. The Communist Party was a big part of the resistance movement against that, and we managed to basically liberate Beirut in 82 and push back the Israeli forces to the south, where they continued occupying the southern part of the country until the year 2000, where basically the National Resistance Front, but also the Islamic resistance parties, had successfully liberated the South, basically. So that's part of the continuous involvement of the US government with supporting Israel is also something that that had very bad influences over Lebanon and the way we were dealing with this issue. We have unresolved problems with the state of Israel that we do not actually we do not use the term state of Israel since we do not recognize it, but with the government of this with the government of Israel basically now we have unresolved matters in terms of the borders and the maritime borders in particular, where there are some fuel and gas in the sea that Lebanon has still not exploited or not started to use them basically, but Israel has been doing that since a few years now. And there are some basins, basically fuel and gas basins, mostly gas, that are in between the borders, basically, and they are disputed. Clearly, the Americans are on the Israeli side in that dispute, and that will also lead to us losing more and more resources to Israel. That basically is kind of the situation on that on that subject.
Yeah, and I wonder if you can also talk a little bit about Palestinians in exile, refugees in Lebanon, kind of their conditions and how the party collaborates with Palestinians in Lebanon.
Sure. So basically. And we've had Palestinian refugees in Lebanon since 1948, and they live in camps basically that are now transformed into some kind of small cities or urban areas around major cities in Lebanon, like in Saida or in Beirut and Tripoli, and in quite a lot of places. The Palestinian community in the country has been basically an active player in the economy and in the workforce of the country, and the Lebanese Communist Party has been working with a lot of Palestinian political organizations and associations in partnership with them on basically some political and some social issues regarding the state of the Palestinians and in the state of the Palestinian camps, refugee camps basically, and providing support for these people since the 40s and onwards. That basically kind of is the relationship with the Palestinians in Lebanon. Their state of living, the state of these refugees camps are basically disastrous. The Lebanese government has also been not taking part in any way to develop these refugee camps, who are still camps up until now, and that's actually ridiculous. Ridiculous because it means that approximately a million people are living in very bad conditions that are basically outside of the kind of outside of the country in some way, because when you enter the camp, you'll have to pass by a security checkpoint, and then they'll ask you where you're going to, what do you have to do inside, and then same for people exiting the camp, and they keep monitoring who's in there, and all of these basically violations of the right of a society to live after 60 or 70 years of them being in a country, basically. We're still dealing with the Palestinians in Lebanon. Again, the government of Lebanon has been dealing with that subject in very inhumane way in a lot of senses, and that's also something that should clearly improve if basically we manage to build a better system.
Thanks so much for that. And I guess my last things I'm curious about is where you see all of this heading. You mentioned the May elections coming up, and it's pretty clear that the Lebanese political system as a whole is thoroughly corrupt. The current prime minister is a billionaire, and this is the political class comprised mainly of the bourgeoisie. Yeah. I wonder, you know, in the short run, you also mentioned that the crisis hasn't even hit its bottom yet, and it's hard to even imagine that it could get worse than this, when also some of the reports now are about bread becoming incredibly scarce, and there is a bread crisis on the horizon. And I wonder, you know, what your kind of, not necessarily predictions, but kind of thoughts about potential, continuation or how deep the crisis will go, how bad it could possibly get, the impacts this will have on Lebanese society, and also the hope that there will be a communist program and that your Communist Party will potentially be able to play a role in averting this deep crisis and potentially guiding the country in a different direction. So I'm curious about what you and the party see as kind of the future of Lebanon at this point, the potential heightening and increase of this crisis, if it can get even worse, which is unimaginable. And then, you know, what can be done beyond just this political system, which is deeply corrupt, and in hopefully, you know, abolishing that system and really implementing something, as you're saying, that is radically different.
Okay, so basically, since we took the streets in 2019 and even before that, the party has been campaigning in every form to be able to build a coalition of opposition forces, basically, and political groups and individuals, in order to be able to push towards an active change in the way that this country is being governed. By the decision of participating in the election wasn't an easy one, since we are clearly against the electoral system itself. But when we decided to run, it's part of the ongoing protests in some way. It's not basically to win the parliament. We do know that even if the opposition in the country represents more than half the people in it, or the majority of the people in it, they won't get represented according to that number in this next parliament. But we are using the elections as a way of protesting and campaigning and spreading the political message, since a lot of people will be actually paying attention to politics in electoral periods, basically, in the times of elections, basically. So participating in the election is not just about getting members into the parliament who can raise the voice inside the system, but it's also about building this coalition of opposition forces and political groups in the country. And when we took the streets in 2019, we actually broke with every element and aspect of this political system. So you mentioned that our prime minister is a billionaire, and it's not just a billionaire, it's basically he's the richest guy in Lebanon. So basically that he and his brother, basically, so the two of them are more than double the next in line in terms of how much money they do have. So basically the richest guy in a country that's collapsing is running the country, and you can imagine where that would lead us to. And that's not, he's not the first billionaire to run the country. Also the Hariri family, who are also billionaires, were basically parts in, or leaders of the government for a long time in the country. And a bunch of the political elite in Lebanon are actually billionaires, even that's declared or not. So basically, some people have money hidden in a lot of places and ways, basically owning real estate and companies, not in their name, but in some of their followers, or basically some of their people's name. So we do have a lot of billionaires running the country. And that's clearly not in the interest of the people now, because we know how the capitalistic system works. Basically, the capitalist system is not about spreading. I lost the sentence in English, sorry about that. But basically, we do know how the capitalist system works. It's not about helping the people. It's about getting more money for the ruling class in Lebanon in particular. But in the broader term of capitalism, it's about making profit. And the gains will only be for the people who are investing this money. So basically, we cannot expect a bunch of billionaires to be running a country towards social justice. That's what I was trying to say. And the Lebanese system is now, it's not just about that. We have another complication, the sectarianism and sectarian forces who are running whole areas. And for example, I'll state some of the political powers in Lebanon. So the Free Patriotic Movement, the Lebanese forces, who are basically mostly the representatives of the Christians in the country. We have what is called the Progressive Socialist Party, that doesn't have to do anything with neither progress nor socialism, which is basically a Druze political feudal party run by the Jumblat family, who's been in... running this part of society basically since a long time. We have Hezbollah and the Amal movement within the Shia community, basically also representing or claiming to represent the Shias of the country, as any other political forces claiming to represent their sect. And all of these groups basically are, even if they seem to be opposing each other in governments and in the parliament and in the streets sometimes, where they where they do like basically violence, violent ways of protesting, clashes and sectarian clashes, like we saw a couple of months ago in Tayuni, where basically people from the Amal movement and maybe some of Hezbollah and the people from the Lebanese forces, which is a Christian political party, where they clashed in the streets, and there were a number of dead and injured people in Beirut due to that. And that's these kinds of clashes are the way that the system basically stops or halts any kind of protests and the mass popular movements in the country, where they'll tell you it's not the time now to deal with the economy. We have a security issue. We have high tension in between the sects and what. So basically, that has been the discourse of the Lebanese government since a long time now, where every now and then they will create some kind of a clash to distract everyone from the actual problem. And so we do have a problem with all of these forces, and we are running against all of them in different parts of the country. So basically, the party is running in the south, in the three parts of, yani south 1, south 2, and south 3, which are the electoral districts basically in Lebanon. We have either lists that we support or lists that we've helped achieve and create, basically. So some party candidates and other places where we have some lists that we do support. We're also running in Mount Lebanon. We're also running in the north and in the Bekaa. So basically, in all of the electoral districts, for the next elections, we are running in a way or another. And we hope to achieve a progress in the number of supporters and the people who actually carry the program that we have written, and the programs that we have developed alongside the allies and partners in the opposition groups and coalitions that we've created across the country. We hope that we can manage to represent a part of this population in the next parliament in a way that will help us raise the voice from inside somehow, But if we don't, we will not basically take it as a as it won't be the end of our basically agenda. We will be taking the streets to protest, and we've never stopped. We will be also trying to gather more people around our political program. We will be working on expanding these opposition coalition groups by participating in political discussions and negotiating programs, and in a way that will hopefully lead to us creating a major coalition that will be able to turn the table upside down in the country, actually, in maybe in a few months or years to come, basically.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciated learning a little bit more about the crisis, and also just hearing your perspective, like personally, about how it's impacted you personally, and you know, everybody else living in Lebanon. And you know, this will be put up and hopefully generate more international coverage and support for the election campaigns for the Communist Party. And I'll definitely continue following the situation, because it is, you know, as we're talking about it, it is unfolding, and not enough people outside of Lebanon are really paying clear attention to the incredible crisis that's unfolding right now. So yeah, thank you again. And I wonder if you have any recommendations of things that people should read or follow more to learn more about what's going on and increase their understanding of what's happening.
Well, there are some publications by the party that I can send you some of the links if you want to include them with the video later on. I'll send you a bunch of links, basically, and articles that would be interesting for the international community to be reading and learning a bit about the crisis and how it's unfolding, basically, in the country. And thank you very much, Joseph, for this interview. I hope that I've managed to answer some of your questions in this short amount of times, since the situation in Lebanon actually really requires a lot of explanation and discussion, because our system is very entangled in a way. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and thank you so much for you know, as you said, this incredibly complicated situation. I'll include the links to help explain that better, but I think you did a great job of explaining it, so people can get kind of a first introductory glance of it, but should, you know, read more and learn more about it to comprehend it. So thank you so much, and you know, the best of luck to the party, and I hope to stay in touch and follow as you guys
continue.
Thank
you, definitely.
Thanks so much. Bye. Take care.